Your conference is being recorded.
This is Sarah Kennedy with the Hands and Voices Our Children's Project monthly call, and today I have the pleasure of introducing you to the founder and powerhouse behind one of my favorite organizations. Irene Van Der Zande is the executive director and founder of Kid Power, Teen Power, Full Power International, which is dedicated to providing empowering and effective child protection, positive communication, and personal safety skills for all ages, abilities, beliefs, and backgrounds. These skills help to protect children, teens, and adults, including those with special needs, from bullying, abuse, violence, prejudice, and other maltreatment, and prepare them to develop safe and strong relationships that enrich their lives. So she's been the director and founder since 1989. Kid Power has been around a long time and has served over 4.4 million people from around the world with workshops, training, with professionals, with parents, with children, and partnerships, including the partnership with Hands and Voices. On a personal note, Colorado Hands and Voices worked with Kid Power of Colorado to create a class just for students in elementary who were deaf and hard of hearing. It was a great learning experience for all of us, and I would encourage anyone who could to get to a Kid Power class. There is so much that you learn even as an adult. So Irene has joined us before, and she's fully aware that folks on the call are generally parents of kids with hearing loss, but they also play critical roles in empowering new parents in our chapters and in our Guide by Your Side programs. So if you're just joining the call, help me welcome Irene, and if you haven't muted your phone, you may want to do that. So that's a star six. And with that, I will let Irene take it away on the topic of protecting our kids during the summer.
Well, hello. I am so happy to be here. As I said earlier, I do have slight allergies, so if my voice gets weird for a minute, don't worry, it will come back. Kids, summer's a wonderful time, and when there's vacations, there's camp, there's different activities that you get to do, time with family. And of course, all of those same wonderful experiences are no longer so wonderful if somebody gets sick or hurt or bullied or abused in any way. And we want to increase fun, reduce problems, and increase our kids' ability to take care of themselves as well as know what we should do as adults to protect them. I've had people, and we did a summer safety call, and we had quite a few, I think you were on that call, Sarah, I can't remember, you were on several of our calls, we've had quite a few people with kids with all kinds of disabilities, including hearing loss, who are having, who have concerns that are also relevant for kids for kids without hearing loss, because it's what happens when you have a grandmother, for example, who's taking care of the kids but doesn't follow the same safety rules you do. How do you advocate for your kids while being appreciative of the caregiver, in that case a free caregiver? Or what do we need to do on a play date in order to make sure that it is safe and successful, by really being sure that we're on the same page with the adults in charge if our kids are going someplace else, or with ourselves if the kids are coming to us? And how do we help our kids when they're going away to make friends and protect themselves from things like bullying? So if you have specific questions, I mean, I can talk for an hour, but where I think people like it most is when we do have stories or specifics questions, please feel free to just jump in. We can't see each other, so you can't raise your hand. So just, interrupt with an excuse me, because I think that when we get into specific examples, and I will cover some skills that you can practice with your kids as well as some actions to take yourself. But I want to encourage you and invite you to speak up if you've got a specific question or concern or a story about something that happened or an idea. So with that, I'll just start, okay? So Hello, yes?
Oh, sounds good. Go ahead, Irene.
Okay, good. Okay. So when we're, you know, the first part is realistic preparation. As we let our kids go to new places and do new things, we need to be realistic about what they are able to do, their skills, and also something called their life experience. I think that the best example I've heard of this is that the teenage son at age 13 of one of our instructors knew more about cars than I ever will. And he knew exactly how they worked. He had the skills. He had the knowledge to drive a car. However, I wonder if any of us would want him on the freeway with us. And I kind of doubt it. So life experience is part of that. But the way to develop life experience is to see safety as a process rather than something, okay, today I'm going to drive you to school. I'm going to take you everywhere. I'm going to stay. And now I'm not. Because it doesn't work like that. We want to first be realistic about what our children can and can't do, and that is about can they speak up for themselves? Can they set boundaries? If not, we need to teach them those skills. Do they know their safety plan? Could they, for example, if they're going out into their neighborhood, to the neighborhood store without, on their own, would they be able to go into a store and ask for help in some form? And we have worked with kids who are profoundly deaf who carry a sign with them, but they need to be able to interrupt busy adults and hand them that sign if, say, they got lost. And they can if they practice. It's just hard because when adults are busy, then and you're taught not to interrupt, then you're stuck if you don't know that when you want to buy something, you don't interrupt, you wait in line. When you have a safety problem, then you do interrupt. If you're lost or somebody is bothering you on the street, then you interrupt, you go to the front of the line, you interrupt somebody, and you keep there, you don't go away. Because often adults who are in stores will send kids away, especially as they get a little older, if they're teenagers, they will send them away because they don't want to get involved and because they don't understand. They think kids are there to cause trouble rather than because they actually need something. So depending on the situation, you make a safety plan for everywhere your child's going to be about what kinds of problems they might encounter. Is it problems from other kids? Is it problems from where they're in a place where they might be approached by somebody, trying to give them a ride? Is it a problem where a counselor might be acting inappropriately? So what kinds of problems might they have with people? And other hazards, too. Is there a river, and then you make a list of what their safety plan is. What do you want them to know and to do? And how to get help if they need it. And then you practice with them, moving away, say, from kids who are bullying them or being mean, and going to an adult and asking for help. So you give kids the skills, but you also work with the caregivers about what, and you interview camps. You talk to the people there. You make sure that your child can always get in touch with you if they're unhappy and they want to, that it's not against the camp rules. And you make sure, and this isn't only about safety with people. This is about, are they really following the safety rules of, say, if they are taking a nature adventure? Some real tragedies have happened when overconfident counselors took kids into unsafe areas. And so you want to know what kinds of supervision there is and what's the level of experience of the people who are going to be in charge of your kids if they're not with you. You want to know, are they, anybody who's taking care of kids, you want to know, has there been a background check? Or if it's somebody you know really well, like a neighbor, then maybe not. But if it's in any kind of institution, nowadays institutions should always have background checks on the staff that they have and address any concerns. So there's your preparation piece. And then as a part of that, what you want to do with kids is to say if they're at a new activity, then if they can, you know, they can speak or sign, what's your name? Can I join you? What's the game? And that's a way to help make friends in new places. You know, it's a form of self-advocacy. And knowing how to introduce yourself to people and shake their hand, look them in the eyes, smile, and reach out. And then how to deal with rejection. So we will, you know, so that if somebody says, hey, what's your name? But maybe they don't speak in this as clear a voice as somebody's used to hearing, and they say, what's wrong with you? Why are you doing that? Don't you talk? You know, or can't you understand me? Then they need answers for that too. If they're in a place with inclusion, there should be, the staff should be trained in inclusion and how to make all kids of all abilities and all backgrounds feel welcome. But if they're not right there, then your child needs to know what to say and or how to communicate in a way that persists a little bit and how to protect their hearts while they do it. Often we have kids put their hands over their hearts, and you might want to just put at least one hand over your heart right now, because of course any time people, you know, don't treat your child well, it hurts our hearts too. And so heart power is for protecting your heart from hurtful things coming inside of it. It's putting good things into your heart, and it's also using your heart to be compassionate and kind to others. And the idea of heart power as a skill can help a child who then says, okay, this person, there are people around in the world, and the kids know this, but maybe when we try, you know, we would like to believe that the world is a kind and wonderful place for everyone, but that's not true for anyone, unfortunately. And so there's always some difference that kids can be picked on for. The kids need to know, if they can, that there are people who won't understand about hearing loss and that they can be ambassadors. In New Zealand, they have a team now of disability ambassadors. This is people with intellectual disabilities. But it's the same idea. I worked on the ambassador idea with a group, of physical therapists and advocates here who were working with kids with hearing loss as well as other disabilities, about this is an opportunity to educate people. And if you can do it by yourself, great. But if you can't, you can get help from the adults in charge. And if they don't know how to do it, of course, then your kids need to get help from you as their parents and their advocates, their most important advocates. But preparing kids, if you're told the world is a safe, kind place and no one's ever going to be mean to you, then the first time you encounter unkindness or prejudice, I call that kind of behavior prejudice, when people are treating somebody as less than because of their differences. And preparing kids to persevere in the face of prejudice and not be devastated by it because they are prepared and they have a plan of action is so much better than not saying anything at all. So that you can prepare kids with answers. And I bet you all have better answers than I can do right in the moment of this phone call. Although if you tell me the things people say, we'll come up with answers. I can remember one girl with intellectual disability. So she had Down syndrome, and her teacher was saying, "Well, kids and it was actually, yes, her teacher, was saying kids are calling her the slowest aunt in school. And I try to stop them, but I can't be everywhere at every minute. And what can she say? Because we teach kids to catch hurting words and to make it, to put a hand on their hip and make that into a trash can and throw the words away, or they can throw them into a real trash can. They're grabbing air. And so, and throwing it into a trash can. And so I told, throw those words away, the slowest and school, and the school, and maybe find, and an answer for this girl was, when you go slow, you see a lot. And she loved it. She did that, said that over and over with the teacher and with other kids. And then she added her own variation on that, which I thought was brilliant, which is, and if you go too fast, you can miss everything.
I love it.
So you throw away the hurting words and you find good answers to put into your heart. And I communicate differently can be a wonderful way of explain, and here's how, can be a way of being a disability ambassador. And I bet that you could even, I mean, I'm just thinking of this as with hands and voices for kids with hearing loss. I bet you could come up with a few, and I could be thrilled to help you do this, with a few simple, like, drawings or cards. I mean, we have cartoons, as you know, that help explain hearing loss to other kids. And because then they're being ambassadors for their ways of communicating, and they're persevering in making connections, and it becomes cool to be their friend instead of risky. It takes practice and confidence to and knowing that, you know, it's sometimes the mean look, and sometimes it's done out of discomfort or ignorance, but sometimes there are kids that have an intention to bully, and they will pick on a child with any difference, any perceived weakness. And so knowing how to advocate for yourself and what to say, what to do, and how to speak up are all things that they can do. But then if it doesn't work, you need to have plan B. You leave. Knowing how to move away from trouble. And if kids are continuing to be mean, or if speaking up or communicating doesn't help to them, you know, trying to educate, being an ambassador doesn't help, then you want to protect your heart with your heart power and tell yourself, I will find a different friend. The kids, we use things like, go away, I don't like you, to practice throwing words away. But you can make, you can see what your child, you can ask a child, what are some of the mean things that kids say, or that you have learned that kids say, or that you're afraid they might say. And practice throwing those away and putting their hand on their heart and saying something good to themselves. And then leaving with an attitude of confidence, and approaching kids with an attitude of confidence. We practice confidence as a skill, as if you can change it on the outside, it's amazing, but it changes on the inside. I once had a teacher who worked in a very, very rough neighborhood, and I'd had all the teachers practice walking across the floor, you know, standing tall, looking around, looking back at me so they could see what I was doing, as a skill. And it's a game, the confidence game. If you don't know how to practice skills, we've got a lot on our website, a huge free online library. You could always email me, any of you, at irene@kidpower.org. We answer questions all the time. And and we have safety comics that are fun and easy to use that also cover the skills I'm talking about. But kids can, just have a child close their bodies down. You can do this right on the phone with me. Really close your body down and realize that when your body is closed down, you're looking down, you're scrunched, that it makes you feel less safe. And it also makes you look like an easier person for others to pick on or ignore. Anyway, with these teachers, I had them practice, and then one of the teachers contacted me. They were very dubious about practicing walking with awareness. That's simple. That's going to make a difference, right? And one of the teachers wrote me about 2 weeks after that she had been working late at school, and there was a group of boys that were older in the parking lot on her way to the car, and that they were making harassing comments. And she said, "Suddenly I realized that my head was down. So I straightened my body and looked right towards them the way you said to do, the way we'd practiced. And not only did they stop harassing me, but it changed completely how I felt inside." And that's the feeling we want our kids to have, is I am walking away with awareness, calm, and confidence. Now, we also teach them to do that respectfully. We don't want them staring kids down, because that's going to lead to a fight. We want them to look with what we call a soft eye. They glance towards them. They don't just stare at them. And then they glance away and go on their way and glance towards them again. So they're leaving, or they're moving through the world, or they're approaching others with an attitude of positive confidence and awareness. Then we want them again to know how to interrupt busy adults, be it a camp counselor, a family member, a storekeeper, and say, you know, there's a problem, and communicate about what the problem is, so that they are able to get help when they need it. If you're going on vacation, it's really important that you keep, you know, we assume that we'll be with our kids every minute of the time, but you can get separated. I can remember being in Venice traveling with my teenagers and my daughter hopping onto a boat, and my husband and I and her younger brother, the boat left before we could hop on. So there's my daughter going off into Venice without us and with no cell phones, nothing. And hollering to her to wait at the next stop. So have a plan for in case you get separated. What are you going to do? And how are they going to do it? And if your child is unable to follow a plan, then the one plan you can work on is stick like glue. Stay together. And then you have to always be splitting your own awareness, because kids can separate from you, be it in a store or on a trip, so quickly. So telling them, if you do get separated, wait at the place where we got separated. Don't wander around. It's like in nature, you know, you teach a kid to hug a tree, unless it's unsafe to be where you are. And you teach them that although we have stranger safety rules, if they're having the kind of an emergency where they cannot come to you or to say a storekeeper for help, that then they can still get help from a rescue crew. That a rescue crew will be calling their name. Or if they can't hear, a rescue crew might be wearing a vest. And if they're lost, remember, most people are good. And so they want to be looking around, and they want to stay put so that you can retrace your steps and find them. Or if it's with my daughter, they're going away from you, they want to wait at the next stop. If you have a plan with kids and you've practiced the plan, so let's imagine we get separated. What are you going to do? We're out in the woods. Hug a tree. Great. Now you just wait there. It might be a long time, but we will find you. There have been some tragedies in nature where kids hid from strangers because the rescue parties, because they were strangers and they had been taught never to go anywhere with a stranger no matter what. So we want them to know that if they're having an emergency, they might need to go to somebody they don't know to get help. And you can make, you know, have them wave their arms in the air for getting help. There's many ways to communicate. It's me. I need help. So you make up a plan specific to your child. And then another safety rule is to check first, and that's you can practice before changing the plan about who you're with, where you're, what you're doing, and where you're going. So suppose that you're at the park and a kid's saying, hey, you know, like is waving to you, come on, let's go to the area with the swings. Then the kids need to ask in whatever way they ask, can I go down to the swings? If you're in an area with away from the, you know, in say the sandbox, you want the child to let you know before they go or to let their caregiver know. And again, they're checking first with the adult in charge. Might be, somebody they know well. It might be somebody they just met, like a teacher or a camp counselor. And they check before they say if they're on a little field trip, before, say, going to the bathroom. I mean, going back for a lost jacket. You want to say you check before you go. You let adults know before you change the plan. And you have kids, communicate, I need to check first. And again, if a friend comes to pick up a child because a grown-up's gotten a flat tire, maybe you were going to pick them up and you got a flat tire and somebody else is there, their job is to check first with whoever the adult in charge is before they go with anyone. So those are some of the core skills that we practice with kids and that we adapt for their specific situations. And then boundaries, you know, we want kids to know I'm thinking about babysitters. I just got approached by a school here where a former student, he's a young man around 19 or 20, and so he was trusted as a member of the school community to do babysitting with kids. And he made pornographic videos of the kids, of some of the kids that were in the school district. Mm. And the kids, you know, kids want to be liked. They have to know what the safety rules are about private areas. And I can send this to you. You know, I'll be happy to send a follow-up with some of the things I've been saying so that you, because sometimes people tell me they're writing frantically while I'm talking. Or you have a recording, which is great. But the safety rule is that first of all, teaching kids not to keep secrets. Touch should not be a secret. Any kind of touch should not be a secret. Presence someone gives you should not be a secret. That helps with the literal child who says, but what about the surprise, you know, present for somebody else? Okay, that's fine. It's a surprise present for somebody else. Everybody's going to know about it soon enough. But that is not the same as, but if somebody gives you a present, that should not be a secret. Videos or pictures about people and their private, you know, about any kind of touch. I'm sorry, I was mixing up two rules. I'll get to private areas in a minute. But about any kind of touch, any kind of game, any kind of video or picture should not be a secret. A friendship should not be a secret. We can apply this to online activities, which should not be secrets. I mean, we can do a whole session about online safety and cyberbullying. But basically, you want to co-pilot with your kids on the internet or on their use of technology in the same way that you would co-pilot with them as they're learning how to cross the street. In a public area, even more so, you know, you're letting your kids loose in all kinds of places when you give them technology, and it's wonderful, and it's more likely to have less supervision sometimes in the summer to go to a place where there is less supervision. So, and kids are clever. They tend to override the parental control. So they need to know what the rules are. So the rules are that all these things are not a secret. And then specific to private areas, the Kid Power safety rules are that the parts of your body that can be covered by a bathing suit are your private areas. And for play or teasing, other people should not try to touch or look at your private areas, nor should they try to touch or look at or take pictures of their, get you to do that with their private areas. We have to say it both ways because, again, kids are literal. They, if you say to somebody, don't let somebody touch, your breast or your vagina, whatever, then they aren't, if you only give them half, a lot of abuse happens where adults get kids to touch them rather than the other way around. That actually happened in Colorado where, his daughter was the volunteer of the year in a school in Colorado. And this was a grandpa, sitting in a classroom, in a kindergarten classroom with a big picture book and kids on his lap. And in full sight of the adults, the parents, the teachers, he's putting the kid's hand down, between his legs. And it took a couple of years before he was caught. He is now in jail, and as part of his sentence, the judge made him pay for Kid Power training for every child in that school, which is kind of a one and only time it's happened, but I was glad that, we were able to do something to help, and of course, we would have much rather it got caught sooner. So we really added, for clarity, that the touching is in either direction. And that pictures or videos about people in their private areas are against the safety rules. Touch for health or safety is not always a choice, but it is never, ever, ever a secret. So when you give kids that kind of information, you're helping them to recognize an unsafe situation so that they can say, stop, I don't take off my clothes for pictures, or they can let you know, because they recognize that wasn't safe. Having kids know how to set boundaries with people they know is also an essential part of this, that they are able to, and they can do it with words, they can do it with gestures, but it is, really saying, stop, that's against my safety rules, or stop, I don't like that. Often people who abuse kids will start with lower level intrusions, like fiddling with their hair, non-sexual intrusions, in other words, and then go on to, test their boundaries and basically lower their boundaries until the kids are, are vulnerable to becoming abused. So teaching kids how to set boundaries about any kind of unwanted play, teasing, or affection is critical to their being able to set boundaries around sexual type of behavior. A lot of times people test the safety rule, the kids' ability to keep secrets, in this really terrifying and interesting, for my work, book called Conversations with a Pedophile. An art therapist interviewed a man who was in jail for having molested 1,000 boys through church groups, where parents loved him because he was so wonderful with the kids. We need to remember that people who abuse kids can look like anybody, and that they will often spend time winning the trust of a family or a church or a school or a youth group before they do anything inappropriate. Anyway, this man would find kids by swearing. He'd say a swear word, and then he'd say, oh, I said a bad word, but please don't tell your parents, because then they wouldn't let me play with you anymore. And then he went after the kids that didn't say anything. So being, again, that not keeping things a secret and saying I don't keep secrets can be a great protection tool for kids. I've been talking nonstop. I can keep going, but I feel like I should pause in case there's any questions or any stories or specific situations people would like advice about.
This is Sarah. I will jump in with a question about sleepovers. that's an area that can be difficult for families to navigate. On the one hand, we're excited that our child's being asked, but on the other hand, how do we prepare our kids for a whole different family's set of customs and how they do things, and then give our kids a safety net of, you can reach me if you're uncomfortable with anything?
That's a great question. So, first of all, you're wanting to, cover the basic skills that a kid can set boundaries and say that I'm not comfortable and insist on calling you and getting hold of you. But I also know how to tell the adult in charge. So if they're at a sleepover, it's to floor me. I never let my kids go to a sleepover or even a play date if I didn't know the family. And if I didn't, so get to know, and then people would send their kids to me all the time. Now, we were a perfectly fine place to send your kids, but it floored me that they would. And so from our side, we get to know the family. We make sure that they are, comfortable with our child's way of communicating. And that we've got a plan if things get stuck in any way. And then that they are going to provide supervision, that they're not leaving the kids with older siblings, for example, and going out. That they are not letting the kids go on, down the street to the park unless they go too, unless you feel comfortable with your child doing that. Leaving kids for just a minute with older siblings is where we've seen a lot of trouble happen, because just a minute is often not just a minute, and because older siblings' friends the older siblings themselves sometimes cause the problem and not the other child themselves. So being really clear on what your expectations are and getting a commitment, because we suggest that you ask questions like, is there a gun in the home? And how, and if so, how is it kept away from the kids? Is it locked up and stored safely? It isn't a question of automatically if there's a gun in the home, you don't want your child there, but you don't want a loose gun in the home, right? So that again, you're on the same page about what's going to happen there. And so that's the preparation piece with the family. Then with your child, it is that this is going to be the plan for your sleepover. You're going to stay in the house. You're not going to sneak out in the middle of the night. We give them peer refusal skills. In fact, we have one specific to, let's go out, everybody's asleep. We have one about watching a pornographic movie and one about not sneaking out. And it's the same thing. Let's do this. Come on, let's do this. What are you, a baby or something? Really resisting that emotional pressure. And then changing the subject and saying, that's against our safety rules. Let's do something else instead. Let's stay here and play a game instead. And giving kids a set of, there's a book that that Sharon, I can't remember her, Scott, gave us permission to use the peer pressure reversal tactics in. It's called How to Say No and Keep Your Friends. I like the book. I think it's a bit preachy for some kids, but I really like it. But she gave us permission to include these in our safety comics and in our classes is ways to say no and, practicing, how to change the subject, how to have a better idea, how to just ignore and keep doing what you're doing. But the bottom line is you don't change the plan. If the plan was for you to stay here or to go out in the afternoon down to the park with the parents, you don't change the plan without checking with you first. That's their safety net. You check with the adult in charge, and if it was different than the plan, that they, in a way that they know is going to make you uncomfortable, that they let you know. Not that you're going to take them away because they won't want to be taken away, but that you'll clarify with the adult in charge what your expectations are so that they can stay and be safe and have a good time. The mean kids stuff that happens, again, having them know how to, sometimes things start as a joke and then become hurtful. So them knowing how to tell friends, to communicate, we talk about making a bridge. You know, I know you're just wanting to joke and have a good time. And I feel uncomfortable when you, when you start to, pressure me to watch a video that is about sexual stuff and make fun of me for not wanting to do it. Would you please stop? Or I feel uncomfortable when you start teasing me about how I look or about how I talk. Would you please stop? And because people and often have a negative reaction to this, to any kind of boundary, in fact, as you're listening, people listening, I mean, I when I say people, how many of you don't like being told what to do? I mean, everybody raises their hand, me too. Or how many of you don't like being told you did something wrong? We all don't like that. So having a being able to persist in setting your boundaries when there's a negative response so that you're prepared for it again, that somebody says, you're not a good friend. And then you persist and you say, I want to be your friend and I can't, I'm not going to break my safety rules because I'm so excited about being able to be here with you and to have an overnight. Oh, you're no fun. You know, you throw those words away and say, let's find a different way to have fun. So you rehearse. It's like little social story, dramas that kids get to rehearse. So they've got the skills ready when they need them. And then you say, you can wake up the adult in charge even in the middle of the night. We have in one story, in one of our books, we have, we try not to make our things so explicit that it's going to put ideas in kids' minds that shouldn't be there. So we had cousins where they liked to jump, and they were actually sleeping in the same bed together. And then the one cousin starts, he's rolling over in his sleep and he squashes the other boy out of bed. That's much less than what actually the story came from, which was him trying to molest the other boy. But you don't have to go that far with a social story. It's just somebody's making you uncomfortable, right? And that he then walked through the middle of the night to the room of the adult in charge and just said, I'm not comfortable. And can I have another place to sleep? So knowing how to wake adults up in the middle of the night, the adults that are there, and if need be, you, is part of the plan. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely. That's great. I would like to open the floor to anyone else who might have a question or a comment or a story.
Go ahead.
This is Christine. Oh, hi. I just wanted to make a quick comment. Your story about the slow as an ant really resonated with me. When it comes to, being able to reframe that and provide more of a strength-based comment or, skill set. And I know that in an early intervention, that's, what we focus on is that strength-based. And I just wanted to comment that we need to kind of keep that mindset even when our kids are out of first to three.
That's a great comment. And coming up with, if you give me a list of the, I often will have people show me the problem, kids or adults too. Show me what is it that your mother says, about that you want to stop, And so they play their mother first, and I model boundary setting, and then we switch roles because then I know how to be that person if we have a list of comments, negative messages that we give to ourselves or that others give to us or to our kids, that often the one for our parents is you're not doing enough or you're doing too much. We get it either way, right? Or you're not doing the right thing. But if you have some of those, I'd be interested in your answers to it, and we can also come up with some of the answers we found.
Great. Thank you.
No, thank you.
This is Janet. I have a comment and a quick story. I really liked, Irene, in the beginning when you were talking about being prepared, teaching our kids to be prepared for the response that we've taught them to do in a situation, because I think often we just take the first step and say, here's what you do in a situation when you feel unsafe. But if they're not prepared for the possible responses, like going to an adult who's busy, then you're not following all the way through. So that really resonated with me. And I just wanted to tell one story about the thing about slumber parties. I know for us, one thing we didn't anticipate when our kids were teens, one night we had kind of done all the things in terms of feeling secure about who our daughter was with and where she was at. And she texted me she must have texted me, and she was in a car and they were heading over to another friend's house. And that's when I realized we hadn't anticipated what might happen after what we had already filled. So we went over and picked her up because I think they were going over to spend the night someplace else. So that's when we said, no, we're heading over to pick you up now. And she was really angry and upset, but we hadn't figured out what that was going to be, you know, in the next stop. So that was just one story that then after that, we learned that if she was somewhere and they were going to go someplace else, she had to let us know ahead of time. So then we could discuss that before it was already in process. So I just wanted to.
So it was that she didn't know, or did that she got emotionally coerced in some way?
No, she was just up for the fun of the group heading off to, you know, just a group decision by a bunch of teenagers, like, oh, let's not spend the night here. Let's go over and spend the night at this other house or these other people's house. So they had just made a group decision together. So, but because we didn't know, you know, who they were heading into or where they were going, that was the thing. So we solved it by then any time moving forward, if she was going to do a change of venue that we hadn't discussed, she would call and talk to us first so we could just kind of talk through and see how we felt about it before she went on.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'm sure that was a heart-stopping moment.
It was.
So are there any other stories, questions, comments?
This is Sarah. Often we get comments after the call. We've got a lot of processors that tend to join these. So I will let you know, Irene, if we hear of anything.
Okay.
For sure. But
so,
I love the idea of the realistic preparation and, like Janet said, going deeper into the role play or the, you know, predicting what people will do. I had a conversation with all my kids just a couple weeks ago in preparation for this call, and they all said, we learned some things at sleepovers that we know you wouldn't have wanted us to do. Now, it wasn't anything awful, like watching a scary movie I wouldn't have allowed, and that kind of thing. But they all said, you know, that's something we could have used more practice with, how to respond if someone asks you to do something you don't really want to do. So that was great that you shared some practical ideas about how to do that.
Well, good. Well, again, you can go to our website at kidpower.org. We've got a ton of information. You can send specific questions. I'll have you go to safety, S-A-F-E-T-Y, at kidpower.org, or you can email me at irene@kidpower.org. Either way works. Safety is often just easier to remember. And our safety comics, a lot of people have found them so useful because they illustrate the skills and because they're funny. And so they make it a good tool for any kids. And then if there are, you know, just a request is, if there are specific situations that we're not addressing for kids with hearing loss, we would appreciate knowing so that we can make sure that the materials we provide are as inclusive as possible.
Great. You know, that sounds like an awesome thing for someone to sign up for on the next part of our call, which is the next month I will, only we're going to call it this time, this summer I will. And this is a part of our call where we talk about something that we'll pledge to do in order to learn a little bit more about the Our Children Safety Project and further our own knowledge. Maybe it's for our chapter as well. So I'm going to start you off with, I will get with our core team over the summer and start planning some of our monthly phone calls for next fall, which will start up again in October. I believe that's October 10th, after the leadership conference that will be held in Illinois in September. Anyone else care to take a stab at something you'd like to do over the summer for the Hour Project?
This is Janet. I will make sure that all of the recordings of our guest speakers this year are put in order and visibly on the website under the Our Project page.
Great.
This is Cresta. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Well, I never know because I mute it when I call in, but then I also push mute on my phone. And so then I might negate them by double muting. I will continue to work on the virtual book club project for developing literacy and safety for children. And I will participate in any other organization for next year.
Great. And the book club meets the first Monday of the month?
First Monday of the month, typically 1 o'clock Mountain Standard Time.
And maybe the How to Say No and Keep Your Friends book might be something to look at.
I wrote that down, yes. And then I also wrote down Irene's, that's what I wrote down, How to Say No and Keep Your Friends. And there was another book that you had sent me that I have written down as well.
Great. Anyone else care to share?
This is Gwen in West Virginia, and I'm just going to shoot small. I'm just going to try and share this information with our chapter and put it on our Facebook page to share with other agencies and organizations for families before the summer, like this month.
Great, Gwen. And that's not a small thing to share even a conversation with someone or a post on a Facebook page. Not small. Anyone else?
This is Christine. I will explore ways that we can infuse the Our info in our upcoming Guide by Your Side training in June. But I also wanted to get back to Irene about the things that we say to ourselves or to one another and to try to reframe those so that we do have some templated, you know, information. Sometimes those are hard to come up with. So that's what I'd like to work on.
Wonderful. Anyone else? Okay. In honor of our time, I will close then. I just wanted to share that I asked the camp that our kids have gone to every summer since they were in fourth grade. It's been a while since I've asked them, you know, what do you do to keep our kids safe? So I asked again and had a great conversation with a new camp director, and they were so thrilled to be able to share the wonderful things that they're doing to make sure our kids are safe. And it's some of the things you would expect, like campers are never left alone with one staff person. There's quite a bit of training for each new college-age student who serves on the camp staff, as well as the existing adult staff who are there from year to year. including how to keep kids safe on a hike. They have particular kids that they're in charge of keeping their eyes on, so they don't have the whole group of 25 that are walking up Pikes Peak, but they have just five of them that they are in charge of ensuring their safety. So there's just some good discussions about that. So don't be afraid to bring the topic up. So with that, we close for the summer, and we'll see you back in October. Thank you so much, everyone, and thank you, Irene.
Oh, my
thank
great
you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Irene. Always such
thank
a pleasure.
You. Okay.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye, guys. Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will be terminated in 5 minutes.
Thanks again, Irene.